mean, what is soul?
Allora, adesso te lo dico io. Cos'è soul? Non importa come lo fai. Più alto possibile, meglio è. Pensavi di saperlo tutto. Nel suono giù nell'Atlantico. Col miglior ritmo su questo pianeta. Canta se vuoi, non ti sbaglierai. Accendi questa bomba. Londra è il posto dove troverai questo ritmo. Sono nato nel sud.
Right time now, welcome to Groove, Dr. Groove on Plague Tapes 32. I almost said Groove on the Wireless. So, in a way, that's technically correct. I was doing a series of shows called Groove on the Wireless before we entered into the plague, and then I decided that, but that was just going out on a Friday night, and then I decided that my contribution in this war would be entertaining the troops and trying to keep everybody sane in the lockdown. So that's why you find me doing Plague Tapes 32. I didn't know we'd get up to 32, but we have, and there is some news tonight with Andrew that's going to follow later on. And the show is about an era of music, and it's really literally all over the place. It starts with a song that I just discovered because I've set the studio up and I'm enjoying just going through old CDs, records, everything else, and just listening to stuff all the time. And I heard this Cheb Khalid track and I just thought it was amazing and I wanted to share that with you. The moon is beautiful tonight and it is up and well risen, and just take a moment if you see it. Maybe tomorrow night it's going to be the same. If you get a chance, don't miss it. Just go out there and absorb it, the beautiful moon, and just be thankful for where we're at the moment. That's the important thing, you know. There's not going to be any chat out of me. You're just going to get on with the music, and that's the plan at this stage. And stick around for the news. So we're going to start with Cheb Khalid. There's jazz in here, there's hip hop, there's pop, there's a 1986 song from an album advising you about your private revolution. It's all here, and it's don't miss out. And enjoy. And we'll talk to you tomorrow on Plague Tapes 33. Probably going to be a mix, I would think.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Presenting to you the Bay Area's very own, the dynamic, the soulful DJ Shadow
and the Groove Rock.
Are you ready for the...
Rap, music, aggressive assassination, guns, drugs, violence, sex. Is that all rap is about?
have to do all those burning books, revolutionize at home. Someone been hiding the pieces, someone been burning down the trees. So we need your revolution, baby. There's a planet to set free. We are the revolution, baby. Nothing like your own.
troubles passing.
Just promise that you'll
escapes to rise to stakes. Me and my apes die for babes. Bust heat and high from Jay. Up in the skyscraper, on top of the world. Back is up against the wall. Gun brawl, kid, I end up for all y'all. Trying to stop the ghost from flowing. Spotless rock glowing. Shots from blowing. Pop the sea line growing. Waistline, the clock is showing. We keep it thugged out. Who not knowing? Get your knife blown.
Yo, Bob Digital and Cool G Rap. We set the booby trap. African whiz with the gad inside of doobie rap. Derelict mind crabs. You rapping for a Scooby snack. Foul tongue bitch. You bound to lick my booty crack. Rebel pellet spray tech sound mix no Amex. Heavy slap on my snare drum, son. Could break necks. You get yanked up and spanked up. Your face shaked up. Who the fuck raise your rank up? I'll hold your take up. Pop the lock on the cop handcuff. Pump a Dutch of dust. Bust the jump up and snuff out the judge. Fuck a cell block. Black top caps in the mailbox. Terry Bone Birds. Stash clock in the nail shop. On the strip, took a sip. Twist the L top. The guard you, son, feel like a third rail shot. With gold crossbone, durag, university flag. Blasting the turbo charge from purple herbal drag. Known for the W. Carry a double true in the shoe. Iron the rubber noose in the bubble goose. Bullets soaked in oil. High heat with flame boil. Wu-Tang slang got bang. Makes your brain coil. Shaolin guards. We know the stat kicks. Desert Queen Project. Sunday bake cakes. Uptown Pelon dogs and make cakes. Cold Medina sons. They know in the J-Cakes.
We rapping Wu-Tang. We let tools bang. That's how we do things. That's how we move things. Shoes pain with two in the brain. Keep the ice blue in the range. Me and the Riz quick with two of them things. Got my dick blue in the range. My nigga keep it true to the game. It ain't no telling what I do to you lames. If my mood change, choose the aim. Do you and your dudes the same? Go against grain and lose a fame. Who claim life in the thug lane? But life is real. Let come out a pipe and still. Rob killing heist for mills. Village of that out with slice and grill. Nigga don't think twice to build. Just open shop and dice to grill. Send the chicks out. Bust trip route to the brick house. Stepping on new terrain. Bring the click out. These streets don't want to see you eat. Let a clip out. These niggas flip out. Make their blood drip.
You'll
out.
You'll be the
apes to rise the stakes. Me and my apes die for bakes. Bust heat and high for take. Up in the skyscraper on top of the world. Back is up against the wall. Gun brawl. Kid, I end it for all y'all. Just trying to stop the dope from flowing. Spotless rock glowing. Shots from blowing. Pop the sea lock growing. Waistline, the clock is showing. We keep it thumped out. Who not knowing? Get your knob blown in.
We said uptown, Pelon dogs, you make cakes. Cold Medina, son, you know when to take cakes. Devin Queen, Project Wizards, they make cakes. Shaolin guards, we know when to stack cakes. Uptown, Pelon dogs, you make cakes. Cold Medina, sons, you know when to take cakes. Devin Queen, Project Cast, they bake cakes. Shaolin guards, we know when to stack cakes. Desert Queen Project Cast, they bake cakes. Shaolin guards is known to stack cakes. Uptown Pelon dogs, you make cakes. Cold Medina son is bound to take cakes.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the new section of Plague Tapes 32. 32 is a significant number for some people. Very significant. Let's steer away from the jokes. This is the serious section. There's no jokes here. Coronavirus. Who knows? We're up to 32 plague tapes, so we're really... It's been going a long while. Nobody really knows what day it is anymore. I think it's a Thursday. I think we're in May. That's about as much as I know. Any other news?
So, lots of stuff happening today. And good news. Today's pretty much all good news. So, the big good news item was that there were only an additional 137 cases reported. So, if you remember, our biggest report in any single day, now that didn't include backlogs from Germany, was something like 1,100.
Right.
I think that the largest real figure by day tested might have been up around 900. So, 137 is way, way, way down. And in fact, it's only a 0.6% increase on the number of cases
we had.
Less than 1%.
Wow, that's impressive.
And way less than the 33% that unchecked reproduction would be. And in fact, when you dig into those numbers further, it's a bit of an oversimplification to do this, but it looks like only 20 of those were from a setting that wasn't a community residential setting, so something like a nursing home.
Right.
So only 20 was general community spread, and that probably would have included healthcare workers as well. That it's very low.
And I do remember at the start of this thing, we were really worried because when the numbers were really big and multiplying, we were getting figures of 25% were health workers. Really, like, shocking.
Well, it's still
figures,
that as a percentage, that's still very high. It's higher, it's 28 or 29 now.
Right.
That's partially because, I mean, there's two reasons for that. Obviously, health workers are considerably more risk of catching
at risk,
it.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One is because some of them are working with patients who have COVID, so obviously they're at risk, particularly when the PPE wasn't great.
Yeah.
Secondly, they're interacting with other healthcare workers. And thirdly, they're still going to work every day, so they are the ones getting public transport and being in canteens and shared spaces.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's one reason. And the other reason is they are a focus of testing. So, there could be more cases out there, but they're more likely to get healthcare workers because they're really looking for those. However, that really puts us, like last night I was saying, it'd be great if we could get down under 100 new cases a day by May 18th.
Yeah.
And being somewhat going, I think that looks possible. We're a long way of the way there. Now, possibly that 137 will be an exceptional low. It'll probably jump up higher tomorrow. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, it could be because it's been a funny week with a bank holiday and stuff as well. So,
yeah, expect that to be ironed out of it, actually, at this stage. In fact, if anything, there was a bit of a rush of cases over the weekend, which I think were connected with both the meat factory outbreaks and the direct provision outbreaks. I think the figure I've seen is that there's 164 cases in direct provision settings, with 99 of them, in fact, in Balskin alone, which is the reception centre out near the airport.
Balseskin,
is that what you say
that? Yeah, it's out by Finglas.
That's
where you get taken if you arrive into the country.
Right.
The first place you get taken.
Right, so they tested everybody in there last week and they found 93 cases in the population of about 350 people. So that's a good illustration of how the virus can really spread given the opportunity. I'm not exactly sure what the setup out there is. I suspect it might be a bit of a prison-like setup given it's the first place they put people into.
Yeah, like it's because it's beside the airport.
That's where
you do. And then you get sent, transported from there to one of the camps. Yeah. One of the Orwellian terms, I love this term, reception centre.
So
you get taken to a reception centre, or somebody maybe in Kerry or Clare or somewhere.
Yeah, so between that one and then the Cassivine place would also account for a lot of the rest of the cases. And then I think the smaller outbreaks in at least three other ones. But they would have all been probably over the weekend. They're saying that tomorrow at the NPHET meeting they're going to discuss testing everybody indirect provision the same way they've tested everybody in nursing homes.
So it's the next
point. Yeah, I mean, they didn't say they were going to decide to do that, but it's obviously something that's now up for consideration.
Have they talked anything about, have they talked about anything, has there been any talk of travellers and traveller sites being tested or...
I don't think that's specifically come up, actually. I don't know. There's been a couple of mentions where they've talked about particularly vulnerable groups. Yeah. So they've mentioned Roma and travellers.
Travellers are included in the vulnerable groups. Yeah. So you would have got tested automatically if you say you're a traveller.
Right,
so.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if there's anything else beyond that.
Just references to the contexts that are more vulnerable to disease spread, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's obviously an awareness of it, but there hasn't been any specific questions. It's kind of interesting, like Jonas haven't touched that at all. I suppose that's perhaps not that surprising.
Should be starting to think about it because, like, it's going to stay. It'll be like, you know, if it stays in the marginal communities, it'll just come back just like it did everywhere
else. Well, exactly. And also, I think what's going to happen now is that's going to become very visible because when there was 800 cases being found every day, if, you know, 20 of those were in the Roma community or 20 of those in the traveller community, it wasn't that noticeable.
Yeah.
Whereas if we're getting down to having under 100 cases and a fifth of them or a quarter or that, then that's actually then going to start up to show up in the stats.
Yeah.
And the same with direct provision. So it's definitely going to put considerably more political pressure on the governments, I think, to do more than they have, because what they've done so far is mostly pretty inadequate.
Yeah.
Homeless services are another example. Where, you know, I mean, it's not like they've done nothing, but there's an awful lot of... I mean, on the marginal groups in society, there's an awful lot of bullshit, particularly around the kind of calling all sorts of things family groups that are not family groups. Yeah. So in the direct provision setting, that's the excuse for putting three people who don't know each other into a room. Which is better than having eight people who don't know each other in a room, but three people who don't know each other are not a family group.
Yeah.
And of course, Keelings were pulling the same bullshit with trying to claim 49 people were a family group.
Yeah.
It's a very, very 1920s family.
But then it's also a reflection of the way that... marginal groups and working with marginal groups has always been left to the community and voluntary sector.
Yeah.
So they just basically sign a contract and they deliver services through people. So like whatever's been done around the homeless people has been kind of led, we know that that's been led by Austin, a local GP.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with traveller organisations. They're just being left to deal with it themselves.
Yeah.
But it does need that additional help now. In terms of the authorities need to get stuck in and trying to provide the kind of help that they need and the services that they need.
Yeah, well, I mean, to an extent, it's important that the travel organisations or whatever lead that process.
Yeah.
You know, because that they need supports, because I'd imagine the public health teams would be a bit lost.
No, that's true.
And probably wouldn't necessarily be well received either.
And
so.
you don't want anybody from Tuusula, for instance, showing up onto a site, because that's not going to go down well.
So one of the things that came up yesterday that's worth mentioning as well is they trained 2,000 people altogether to do contact tracing, right?
Okay.
And it emerged that yesterday there were only 40 of those people working.
Right.
And people go, God, that seems like, how come? You know, and they say, well, that's all we needed, you know, that we only need as many people as that are needed.
Yeah.
And then a journalist did a follow-up question today, which I thought was quite informative, where he said he'd looked at the WHO recommendations, and that recommendation would have been to have two or three times as many people working, right? So actually...
Not 40, 120? Yeah.
So actually that turned out to be one of these things where they kind of netted people because... they understand how things work, just hadn't explained stuff very well yesterday with the way that sometimes happens. So in fact, what it is, and they say this a lot, it was, I think just a lot of us didn't understand what they meant. So in the context of nursing homes, they keep saying, oh, well, you know, we've deployed public health teams to them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it actually turns out that the contact tracing in those contexts is done by the public health teams. So they've about 60 to 80 people who are specialists, doctors, all the rest. So... when they go into a nursing home, part of what they're doing is contact tracing.
Right.
And they were saying, like, really, the other people we've trained in to do contact tracing, they wouldn't have the skills or the specializations for that sort of role.
Okay.
They're more for, like, you know, Dermo's got it, they ring you up and talk to you.
Kind of more community.
Yeah, the community, more what would be more straightforward cases. So obviously in a nursing home, you're trying to trace people who may, in some cases, aren't really capable of explaining who they've had contact. Yeah. You know, it's like a much more complex thing to do. So that would have meant that actually they didn't have 40 people yet working yesterday. They had that 60 to 80 plus another 40 people. So that actually gets you up to that ratio. So it's kind of like,
oh, so they were doing it right, but we just didn't know because they weren't telling us how
they didn't explain us. Yeah. So
that's very typical. They don't explain how they're doing anything.
Well, I mean, I think that's what happens though when you have people who probably know their job extremely
well. That knowledge, there's internal
and there's always
knowledge.
There's always the challenge of how do you communicate information to people who don't know, because you easily fall into assuming a certain level of knowledge on their part that doesn't exist. It's precisely why it's important to have a question and answer session at these sort of things. Even if sometimes, as with yesterday, it's a little bit crazy and pear-shaped.
But we won't get into that. Not right now, anyway.
So the other thing I wanted to do bring up was, because it really fucking annoyed me, was Leo came out with a stupid off-the-cuff remark in the Dáil today saying that COVID might have been here since December.
Right.
Or January, right?
Okay.
I've already been arguing this with my parents because I had a bad flu back then and they had a bad flu.
Yeah.
So they were...
Was the time. Everybody has one already. Yeah.
So they've sort of had this thing, oh, maybe we had it already, you know, blah, blah. And I'm going, no, you didn't have it. 1,300 people didn't die in January, blah, blah, blah. That argument.
Yeah.
And in terms of like social media, when Leo's remarks were posted, literally hundreds of people were posting, oh, I had a really bad flu back then, I must have had it, blah, blah, blah. Literally, I'm not joking about the hundreds.
And now people, these same people, do they think they're immune or something?
Well, this is the danger. Like, you think you had it, so therefore you think you're immune, so therefore perhaps you engage in more risky behaviour, so therefore you start infecting yourself and other people. That's one end of the disaster. And the other end of the disaster is the kind of far-right crowd who want to push everybody back to work and say it's insignificant, then season it and go, oh, well, you know, lots of people didn't die in January, which they're right about, so therefore it's not very dangerous, which they're wrong about. Anyway.
The far-right people who organise protests and then don't go on them themselves.
Well,
they're
full of crazy contradictions.
Yeah.
But anyway, so a journalist did bring that up as a question, and they didn't crush Leo, you know, they were kind of very polite the way they answered it, but it was basically... what they were saying is, in the new year, because they knew about COVID, obviously, and they were aware it was probably going to reach Ireland at some point, so they were very suspicious of any respiratory infection that was coming into the hospital. So, in fact, they were testing people. And in fact, by the time they got...
As far back as late last year?
No, more like January, February. And in fact, by the time they got the first positive test, which was February 29th, they carried out 400 tests, all of which were negative, right? Mm. So the point of that being that, okay, it's possible there might have been one case or two cases, but if they were, those people didn't infect other people, you know? So maybe somebody came in from China, they had it, they stayed at home, nobody else got infected, right? What definitely didn't happen was it was not transmitting.
Yeah.
In there, it wasn't spreading. Yeah. Lots and lots of people didn't have it. If that was the case...
Yeah.
Some of those people would have gone to hospital, they would have been tested and they would have found it.
Do we know why the Glorious Leader, what possessed him to say that? Like, what was he thinking? What was the rationale behind?
I have no idea. I think it was simply an off the kind, because lots of, I mean, like, I'm sure he's probably had exactly the same conversations with other people who had that bloody flu and were like, I was really sick with it.
Yeah.
There is one solid reason for it, which is there's a weird case in Paris around, I think, December 27th, where they've gone back and because the French apparently collect swabs for respiratory stuff and store them as part of their routine medical thing. I don't know if we do that here or not.
Oh, right, sure. But, every autopsy has it.
Autopsies, just the test swabs. You do test swabs for flu.
Right.
You know, to determine to determine how dangerous it is. Like, is it a real flu? What we call flus.
Right.
So in France, they've gone back and they've retested lots of those swabs for COVID. They found one from, I think, December 27th, which was a guy who had COVID back then. He wasn't somebody who was particularly active. However, his wife, I think it was, worked in a shop near the airport. So what they think is possible is that somebody came into the shop who'd arrived in from, say, China, or might have been somewhere else, but let's say China for the sake of argument. They infected her, she infected him, but then it died out.
Right.
So, like, it ended with that particular infection chain. So it wasn't that it spread from that date.
Yeah, okay, right.
You know, so And I mean, that's, so there's a few countries where they've just, when they've gone back looking, they have discovered, oh yeah, there were earlier cases. And in the US, that looks like it was quite significant, because in Washington State, it looks like there was much more significant transmission before they, the first cases they actually knew about.
Yeah. The same in California, they've said.
But it's not, it's definitely not the case there was mass transmission in Ireland in December and January. You know, there might, maybe one or two cases, but not mass transmission. Yeah. Everybody didn't
because
have
they were
it.
Testing
that bad
all
flu
people anyway.
Was just a bad flu. Exactly. And you are definitely not immune, which is the key point.
Sorry, there was one other thing that I was going to ask in terms of, because they broadened the criteria, do we have any idea what the uptake is like? Because I think a lot of people are with one symptom.
Yeah,
and they're getting tested.
That question wasn't asked. I think that only came into effect today.
Okay.
Well, they did it in two stages. So what they, the first thing they did was they changed it so it was only one symptom, but you still needed to be from one of the identified groups, which included close contacts,
right.
And then today, I think they dropped that requirement of being from the group. So in theory, today you could have gotten contact with your doctor, said, "I've got a bad new cough. Can you refer me?"
Yeah.
And those people would probably only, some of them might have been tested this afternoon,
right?
But they'd mostly be getting tested tomorrow, probably. So they wouldn't have any data really at all yet on how many of those will come through. I mean, I'm a bit nervous about that, because I know last time they got 20,000 people a day looking to be tested, which isn't surprising. I've got hay fever at the moment, right, which makes me sneeze a lot. Now, sneezing isn't really a symptom of it, but I could see if I was anyway anxious and I'd been in contact with people or whatever, I had concerns around it, I might well be going, oh, I wonder if I have it, I might get tested to be safe.
True. But
it wouldn't need a lot of that to completely flood the system again.
At the same time, considering the isolation that people are going on, people shouldn't really be coming in contact with anybody in terms of,
most people are probably doing low level risks at this stage.
Yeah.
You know, they're meeting the mate in the park and they're keeping the 2 meters distance and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's almost no chance of transmission if you do that. But you might worry about it afterwards. And if your hay fever is going a bit, I could see some people worry a lot more about being sick than others. And this is a very stressful time.
Yeah.
So it would certainly be easy to see how you might get a lot of people going forward for testing just to reassure themselves, which would not be good because it would break the entire system again.
Yeah.
So
we're going to find out whether that
we're
going to
find out.
Now.
They think they're not, that's not going to happen. What they've been doing is with GPs, they've been recording people contacting GPs with symptoms for some time to get an idea of what they think the demand would be. And then they're expecting that sort of number again.
Yeah.
My suspicion is it might be quite a bit above that, because I think once people know it's possible to get tested, maybe a lot more people will go forward for reassurance purposes. But we'll see. We'll see. They do think they can test about 10,000 to 12,000 a day at the moment. The thing about the earlier attempt when they tried that, it was still in the kind of end of the cold and flu season. So there would have been more people with symptoms anyway. Whereas at the moment, you've only really got hay fever out there. And actually also, I mean, all the social distancing stuff and isolation stuff we've been done also means that flus and colds should pretty much have stopped transmitting as well.
Yeah,
you know, it works against that. So
that's true.
So there should be few. But anyway, we'll see all that in the next week, basically. So what was the other thing I wanted to say? Oh, yes. So the today, of course, was the modelling day, which is the most exciting.
Super nerd day.
Modelling day.
Love that.
And that was good news too. Hooray. So they think that the reproduction... remains at, was somewhere between 0.5 and 0.6 this week. They actually introduced a third way they're measuring that. And they said, like, even the Imperial College one, which gave the same numbers last week, but the confidence intervals were much tighter, so they were much more sure about that. And indeed, the drop in new cases.
Confidence, when you say confidence intervals, you know you've lost most people. I mean, not just me, but everyone else.
That's the potential error. But anyway, but also the indication we've seen in the fall off of cases, despite the ramping up of testing, would also indicate that, you know, if it's 0.5, that means two people get it, one of them transmits it accidentally to somebody else, the other one transmits it to nobody.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sort of
That keeps everything going in the direction we want it to keep
yeah,
going.
And, yeah, and the other thing to realise is the big advantage of being on the downward curve of this is it means more and more people are getting over it.
Yeah.
So they're also becoming non-infectious. So rather than, we had 20,000 cases, I think, or 24,000, I have that up the top.
Yeah.
So there's I think the figure they had yesterday was they think there's probably 18,000 have recovered. So that's 6,000 active cases.
Wow.
And if you're only adding in 130 new cases into that, there's probably like 1,000 a day recovering up somewhere in that sort of region.
Right.
So that 6,000 becomes 5,432 really quickly.
Yeah.
And that reduces the opportunity for infection, which, you know, is the other kind of really important part of it. So like all those are heading towards the sort of point we want to be for May the 18th. Something worth mentioning in beside of that, and this is a callback to your opening joke about the 32.
Yeah.
Not looking so good in the north.
Yes, of course.
What's happened there
our fourth green field.
Yeah, so if you look at the test results, what happened is they seem to have stabilised it.
Yeah.
So they like us, they went shooting up, they hit a point, and they kind of stabilised at that point and brought it down slightly, right? Sort of thing.
Kind of like the UK, it's following the UK model.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of thing, if your reproduction rate was 0.995,
yeah.
So like there's a little decrease, but it's mostly going quite flat, right?
Yeah.
And the problem is their testing isn't really as keyed up as ours. The UK is trying to get up to that. As we've talked about, there's an awful lot of bullshitting.
And they also stopped. They started doing contact tracing. They stopped doing contact tracing.
Yeah.
Then they went back to it. They're not measuring deaths in care homes.
Yeah.
The north is. So there's a whole pattern.
And in fact, a measure of the chaos is that Johnson is meant to announce whether or not he'd extend the lockdown over the weekend.
Yeah.
But in fact, Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland announced around lunchtime today that she was extending it for Scotland. I saw a tweet saying that Michelle O'Neill, who's the
Sinn Féin
up the north, deputy, whatever
they
call it, had announced it was being extended for the north for 3 weeks as well. So you've got your different bits of the UK, aren't you?
Has Arlene said anything yet?
I don't know. I didn't have enough time to look into it.
I
presume that was reflecting an agreed policy. I mean, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. Because you wonder if Nicola Sturgeon actually ran it by Johnson at all.
Yeah, maybe she sent a text message.
Yeah, exactly. After she said it. Yeah. So.
But I mean, essentially that's the correct decision because they need to get their cases down before they can...
Yeah.
Relax. And Johnson and the British press have been signalling very strongly that they intend to have significant relaxations, which is madness because they've like 7,000 or 8,000 new cases a day. And that's a bad testing.
And the death
real numbers
count?
Way
what's the
that.
Death count? Do we know?
I think it's...
We were talking about over 50,000, were we?
Yeah, well, the official one's 30,000.
Right.
The Financial Times estimates it. So... Because there's a long delay with their report.
Of course, yeah. Because they're juking the stats. We fucking know what they're doing,
So the FT, I think, reckons it's about 52,000.
And in America, like, I saw that they went over 70,000.
Yeah.
But, like, the UK at 50,000.
Yeah,
America, 350 million people at 70,000.
Yeah. Britain's in an extraordinary mess.
It's
extraordinary mess.
Yes. And they're talking about relaxation is just ludicrous.
It makes that they're going to do is create the situation where they have to lock down for 3 months. You have to get the new case level way down.
Yeah,
particularly because they don't have contact tracing set up.
Well, yeah, they did. They stopped it. They've started it again, but we don't know how what level of chaos that is.
Yeah, and you can see the level that we've struggled with it here. So.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine if you haven't been doing those 3 months of preparation trying to set it up and you've got whatever, 10,000, probably 10,000, 15,000 new cases a day. I mean, that's not going to work.
No.
So there's the whole danger that, you know, really Johnson's still pursuing the herd immunity model and therefore...
Just not telling anyone about
it. And we'll just open up tomorrow. But I mean, I remember doing way back, doing calculations as to probable mortality and... finding absolutely horrific numbers that I didn't post anywhere because they were so bad. But like, you know, like here, 50,000 if we had simply let it run out of control was not an unreasonable estimate, right?
And that's like what, for 3.5 million people or 4 million people?
What, we five.
On the whole island, are we talking about the whole island?
The Republic's 4.98 million or something, I can't remember the exact number.
Okay.
It's about 6.5 on the whole island.
Right.
But Britain, like, you were talking about a minimum of 500,000 and it pushing up from that, you know, like if you just allowed it to run out of control. Now, if they're doing this other strategy that people talked about, which is you go for herd immunity, but you control the intensity of it. So the idea is not to let your hospitals get too overloaded. So basically, otherwise it shoots up because everybody who can't get into an ICU starts dying.
Yeah.
So, you know, then maybe you could keep it down to 200,000 or something. But it's still pretty damn crazy. And it's not clear to me that strategy has been abandoned. And in fact, the way they stitched up Niall Ferguson the other day would also make me pretty suspicious about the whole thing. So he's the guy who was heading up the equivalent of NPHET. Like, I don't think he was the head of it. He was one of the major figures in it. But basically, I think it was the Daily Telegraph published this story of how he snuck out of lockdown to meet with his married mistress, blah, 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 blah.
And then he resigned
as a result of it, right? And, I mean, that was such an obvious... what can we do to get this guy? Here's something we know.
Right. Yeah.
That, I mean, particularly given Boris, you know.
Yeah, like old tabloid journalist and editor.
Yeah, but also like Boris's behaviour, that sort of sphere. It's kind of like, as somebody was saying, when he got out of hospital, he didn't go to his second home, a third home, he went to his fourth home.
Right.
You know, like... Yeah. So that was definitely
how many kids does he have?
That was
he
definitely
really know.
Let's get this guy. And and Ferguson was the guy who kind of halted the first go at herd immunity by saying, "Hey, I've reran the maths on this, and actually a lot of people are going to die."
So they've got him out of the way.
So
they've got that obstacle out of the way.
I think the tabloids were calling him Professor Lockdown or something.
Oh, right, okay, yes, but the lunacy of all this is like, is this not what you get when you put an Eton boy in charge? Because, you know, those pricks have grown up with the idea that they can just sacrifice people.
Sacrificing the herd is pretty... Yeah,
that's old Etonian logic there,
that's,
you know?
I must go and look at it, because I remember when I first came across this herd immunity concept as they were applying it in Britain, pointing out that it was very similar to what happens in terms of the famine here.
Yeah.
That there was this decision that, this is the natural way things are, and so you just you don't act to stop it. You just allow this bad thing to happen because that's the way things are and poor people should die, basically. So that was my take on that.
Wow. Okay, I think that's pretty much
a long session. There's loads more to talk about.
No, but that's okay. I also realised that when the nerds get together, it's always exciting. There's always an exciting update on a Thursday.
Yeah. The modelling one's the good one.
Yeah, the modelling one's the good one. Okay, thanks, Andrew.
All right.
Stands all alone. You can hear her hum softly from her fire escape in the sky. She fills the bags neath her eyes. Didn't time sound sweet yesterday? In a world filled with friends, you lose your way.
She's a haunted house, and her windows are broken, and the sad young man's gone away. Tears smudge her lipstick, and the neighbors just whisper all day. Didn't time sound sweet yesterday? In a world